Welcome to Pause It, Play It. I'm Josh.
I'm Matt.
And I'm Dan.
And this is another bonus episode.
Woo, 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 bonus.
Bonus, bonus. Because this is a...
bonus.
Review first impressions of Notes on a Conditional Form that was released this weekend by a band called The 1975. But I'm assuming you know that. Notes was released this Friday. We've obviously heard like 8 singles, I think, but we finally got the full 22-track album. Let's get straight into it. What are our first impressions? Who wants to start?
I'll start. You know what? And this is a bold claim, because I've only given it a thorough listen twice, but I think it's the best album.
Whoa!
I didn't expect that.
First time round, obviously, first listen, you're a bit like, okay... that's bedding in. I need another round. Because everything's a grower, isn't it? Really?
Yeah.
But yeah, second time round, I was making notes on it. Notes on notes. and because I was like giving it proper review and thinking about it more, it made me think, oh my God, this album's just brilliant. Like, I feel like almost every track could be the best single that a different band or artist could produce. Mm. You know, like, there's one, yeah, which I can't remember. I've put it in my notes, can't remember what it is. We'll get to it. I thought, if Ed Sheeran released this, people would be saying, oh my God, this is the best thing Ed Sheeran's ever written. It's such a phenomenal track. It'd be number one for 10 weeks. But because it's 1975, they probably won't even release it. It'll just be an album track.
Yeah. On first listen, I was expecting some not weird, but I wasn't expecting a standard 22 pop tracks on an album, if you get me.
Yeah.
But I was listening through and I was thinking, like, God, that, after every song finished, I was like, well, that was actually a great song. And then I was getting to like the end and I was like, oh, well, there's not a bad song on it. Yeah, I know what you mean. It's a really complete set of work. I think people have been sort of questioning like the diverse range of like genres and styles, like the orders and stuff. But I just think like that, you know, that's what really, that's what you're going to get from them.
Yeah. It doesn't let you settle. I find if it was a whole album of heavy stuff, like People, you would settle into that sound and you'd be like, all right, okay. Reviewing them, listening to them, like that, but because it jumps so much, you never get to settle into a sound. And it is good in one respect, but also bad for a more casual fan, because they don't know what they're getting and they can't be like, oh, right, I'm in this mood, therefore I can put this album on or whatever. It's like a really shit mixtape. But it's
a bad
really
iTunes
good
playlist.
Yeah, but it's really good.
Yeah.
Well, I was thinking of it. It's less of an album. It is more of a playlist.
Yeah.
Because if you think as well, and obviously they're so on stuff like this, but if you think of how people listen to music now, you don't buy an album on CD, put it in your CD player, and listen to the whole thing, and it's in order.
Yeah,
you go on Spotify, you stream it, you cue songs, you like put it on shuffle, you put them in different playlists, and I feel like they know that.
You buy the vinyl, never play it, just put it on your wall.
But like, they know that people are going to listen to this album, and then when they're in the mood for listening to more electronic ones, they can just cue the electronic ones. Mm. Or when they're in the mood for listening to sort of more stuff like, I don't know, Me and You Together song and Roadkill and stuff like that, they can listen to the more guitar orientated ones.
Yeah. Yeah, I do feel, though, that albums should be listened to as and appreciated as an album. I feel like to do it as singles is very S Club 7. You know? It's just like, right, lads, we want to make a footload of money. Let's just get some singles together, a bit of filler, get this pop band to record it, send it out. Whereas I think this should be listened to as an album, because I feel like there is a journey. There is a journey there, like, from the opening, the 1975, into People, those two messages link. You know, it's we need to care more about the environment, straight into wake up. We need to do shit, peoples.
it's been a weird one for me. It's definitely not my favourite 1975 album, but I feel like it's because they're exploring like their like art more, going into different genres more, and I almost feel like I'm like losing them a little bit.
Yeah, I do know what you mean.
Because I was like, because the genres they're going into aren't necessarily genres that I'm a big fan of, whereas like in previous albums when it's been less like that, I've been like a huge fan of that music and it's all like mashed together. And then, you know, you can't just churn the same stuff out and, you know, I imagine it will all grow on me. But it's interesting because if this was a 1975's first album, I'd probably be a bit like, If you're too shy, it's great. Like, and that would fit on probably any of their albums, and that'd be really within my taste. But I can listen to it with the full knowledge of what the 1975 is and who Matt Healy is and what is like what would have been meant and the references and everything, because they are the 1975 now. But
yeah,
if it was at the start, I'd be quite dismissive of it. I think I'd just be, oh, that's not really for me. So I guess it probably will help me like push into other genres and listen to other sorts of music. But it's just a weird situation when you're like, oh shit, that's like not, I don't know. It seems like a different album to me. Like,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean? This
is what is the neckbeard phase, which is, I picked that up from a podcast called Switched on Pop. And on Switched on Pop, they had Mike Posner as a guest. And they were talking about the neckbeard phase. I think that's what they called it. It's where bands and artists are two or three albums in, very comfortable that they've got a fan base, and they just start doing weird shit. Like the Beatles did it, you know.
Yeah.
They just started... Well, yeah, it's where they grew the beards, stopped really caring about the image as much, and therefore what people thought, and they just went a bit mental. And there was a period where John and Paul of Beatles fame kind of joked about how people would just consume whatever they put out. Like, they used to joke, oh, let's buy another swimming pool, just we'll go in a room for half an hour, write a song, people will buy it because we're the Beatles. So I'm not saying this is what the 1975 are doing, just doing it because they can get away with it. But it's the neckbeard phase where they're just going a bit more mental, and they'll probably bring it. They'll probably just do another the 1975 at one point where it's bangers.
I think they will. You know, like I was listening to the end Music for Cars. Do you know, and then the story on Spotify, the storyline section that the Spotify does now with his cards was talk about him. I was always saying this is as the fourth album and the end of an era, and like closing it out. So I guess you never know which way they're gonna go next. But I do think, like, imagine if he brought out an album just like banger after like in that rock sort of genre like that they came from. I could see like they've talked about writing as Drive Like I Do Again for ages, haven't they?
Yeah,
hinted at that, and I'd be so excited for that because that's like referencing everything back. But I think it's interesting. It's called Notes on a Conditional Form as well. Like I think it almost does feel like notes in a little bit of like, oh well, let's try that. And do you know what I mean? They're really well executed though, and beautifully produced, and I can appreciate that. And I'm like, whoa, like, how does somebody who doesn't know about UK garage really, or hasn't grown up playing it for years, suddenly do this?
I wonder if those references will be lost on other people as well, like that aren't from the UK, like, what the fuck's this? But obviously we hear it and go, oh, that's a reference to UK garage, to Burial, to the Streets. Probably lost on some of the younger fans. But one thing as well, just to go back to the end, when I was listening to that, I thought it was very cinematic, and it felt like it was from a film, like an awakening, an epiphany, something positive had been reached, but at the end of a film, like, I know it's called The End, and it felt very appropriate. But I was getting references to a... This is going well pretentious now. Hold on to your hats. I was getting references to a composer called Barrington Feelong. he's an Australian composer, was based in the UK. He's died now. But he did the music for a computer game called Broken Sword, which I played a lot. Yeah, he did the music for Morse and Endeavour, and it's just got those sorts of vibes. So I don't know if what the strings in that song are samples that they've taken, or they've arranged them themselves, and either taken influence from him, or it's just a coincidence.
Well, it's funny you mentioned the video game thing there, because like they said in interviews that they take a lot of the inspiration from video games and video game soundtracks.
Like, yeah, well, I feel like later on, hold on while I just check my notes again.
I hope the note in your phone is called Notes on a Conditional Form.
Unfortunately not, it's just called Notes on a Conditional Form. Yeah, I know. So...
All right, yeah.
In my notes, I've put more burial influence, SNES music, Pokemon or Zelda, 8-bit. So again, that's, I hear computer game influences in, yeah, I know, but the earlier, you know, like 8-bit sort of stuff, Pokemon,
yeah,
Zelda.
It's mad, that shows how like computer games have progressed, full cinematic scores now in 20 years.
Yeah.
But it's, I've just looked at the credits for The End, and it almost makes me suspicious, because it's beautiful, right? And the credits written by the band, produced by Matt and George, and you're like, really? With no like formal musical education, are you like orchestrating that?
Yeah, to produce that, yeah.
Yeah.
And, I mean, amazing.
But they're they're very well read in music, aren't they? You know what I mean? Like they can.
Yeah, this album demonstrates that.
They're so cultured in so many different styles of music, and it's all credible, like sort of sources that they're sort of like citing from and all this. Like you say, like Burial's one of the most like influential electronic musicians in the last like what 20 years? When was that album released? Like 25 years, whatever.
I'll just check.
Oh, there it is.
Burial, 2007.
Was it? Oh, right, okay, the last, like, 15 years. I thought it was older than that.
No, 2007.
Matt just showed off his vinyl there to the... Yeah, it was an interesting choice, I think, in, like, in terms of the track listing. Obviously, People's a great opener. But then, People, The End, Frail State of Mind, streaming. Like, because if you look at the last albums, you know, they start with, like, singles, really.
Mm.
Like, in the first few tracks are, like, self-titled. It's what? The City, Sex, Chocolate. I Like It When You Sleep is Love Me, Change of Heart, She's American. A Brief Inquiry is what? Give Yourself a Try, Two Time. And then it's Love It If We Made It, it's after How to Draw. This is... To put the two instrumentals right at the top of the album, I thought that was an interesting choice. And I think it's funny because someone tweeted us actually saying that, oh, they can't seem to be able to string multiple good songs together on an album. And I feel like you've got to give it... It's an album you've got to give time. It's not going to be something that's going to sort of, like, hit you straight away with the singles. Like, Too Shy is, like, what, 15th on the track listing or something?
Yeah. Yeah, I know I said this to you the other day, Josh, but it's... I feel like it's a... The singles are the destinations, and then everything else is the journey. Like, as much as it'd be meant just to be like, snap your fingers and you're at Alton Towers, you have a great time, snap your fingers, you're home again. I feel like Alton Towers or any theme park,
well, the theme, you know, parks are available.
Thing, it's so much more. Yes, they are. Chessington World of Adventure. I feel like the whole experience is so much more rewarding, because it's like, you've got to get up at 5 a.m. You've got to drive for a few hours. Then you've got to drive back again. And that, to me, makes the whole experience more rewarding, because things happen on the journey that make the day.
Especially if you've been to Warehouse, you know, Project the night before.
And you slept on a mattress on Dan's bedroom floor.
So the point is that the songs almost they almost act as palate cleansers. They make it's,
they punctuate.
Not that it's shit, but it's like it gets you ready, and you feel like you put the effort into getting to know the whole piece of art rather than just skipping through the singles. But yeah. But I mean, that in itself, though, is like a very privileged position to be in, like you were saying. And it's obviously, they're only just getting to that point now, and it makes me feel weird. I'm like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't get me wrong, I would love another The 1975 where they just do single after single. Because they've got it in them.
I think
it would be more difficult for them to compose those weird arty things than it would to just write a pop tune.
I want more insight into how they do it. That's always been part of it for me, sort of trying to, I guess you never really know, but you can understand the basis of a pop song a little bit more, or I can. But I just like with the I don't understand it, so it does, I can't connect with it as much as I have done in the past, which just feels like a missing element of my 1975 experience, which it might not be for everyone. Do you know what I mean? Maybe other people don't think into it quite as deeply and just enjoy it for what it is. But
no, I do know what you mean. But I think it'll be samples, you know.
What, like they hear a sample and they're like, "Oh, that's cool. Let's do something with that." Yeah. What about this?
You know, the strings or whatever, because at the end where the credits just say written, produced by the 1975, whatever it was. If it's not giving an credit orchestra. To, you know, oh, we used the London Symphony Orchestra or whatever, I think it'll be a sample. Because I think you'd probably still get the credit, don't you, if you just use a sample. You'd have to check if, you know, Fatboy Slim's Sleeve Notes or something.
Yeah, it's because it's their playing. Yeah, when you buy a sample and like, you can buy sample libraries, like, from Spitfire Audio, who I keep watching the YouTube channels on, even though I'm never going to make an orchestrated piece of music. They talk to you about how they make their samples and shit. So interesting. But that's what, even then, like, you still have to understand the different ways that string instruments can play, like legato and other such words that I don't know, in order to, like, select them and pick them. Unless, like, Georgia might just, like, mess about and go, "That sounds good." Like, I don't know.
Yeah. I remember seeing a tweet off Matt's once, and it was just that, I can't remember what the sample was, but he just said, "Oh, we're in this cafe in whichever place, and I've just heard a sample that we've used. It's just been a strange moment for me."
Well, that's getting more and more common, because there was that artist that came out recently and said that Justin Bieber's sort of copied off him.
Yeah.
Because they'd used the same sample from Splice. And then, like, Bieber's people came out basically and said, like, "Oh, no, it's not. It's a, we bought the sample from this place. You must also have bought the sample from this place."
Yeah.
And then the artist that created the sample then got, like, loads of, like, publicity, and producers wanted to work with him because they were so impressed with it. So that's going to happen more and more, that.
Yeah. What's your favourite after your quick listens? Obviously, it'll change. Every 6 months, you probably have a different favourite, won't you? But from your first couple of listens,
I would say Roadkill.
Yeah.
I think he's brilliant.
Oh, the lyrics really to that good. Are brilliant. So honest and open. Or is he faking it? That's another note I've put. Is he being open and honest and brave? Or is it semi-fictional?
It is that sort of conversational Matty Healy lyric, isn't it?
He's so good at that. He gets so much story across in relatively few words, which again is the same on The Birthday Party. There's just he just tells such a great story in very few words.
I think he says stuff that's so mundane. Yeah, most people would write that down and think, "Oh, that's not really a song lyric. That's just something you say, like a throwaway thing you'd say."
Yeah.
But he puts them in and it just works out. It's so good. By the way, is this album tracks or is this including singles as well?
Oh, yeah, anything. Just like the entire album.
Roadkill's great. Me and You Together song, amazing.
It's very busted.
Yeah. What Should I Say as well, the sort of really poppy sort of like electronic one. I think that's brilliant. But I still think my favourite's The Birthday Party, you know.
It's really good. The Birthday Party is really good.
It's just amazing. Just the how you can come up with a song so good with such interesting lyrics and no proper structure.
Yeah.
It's just like that stream of consciousness sort of.
Yeah, yeah. I suppose it's kind of like the development of Sex. Sex has got that no real structure to it. It's just got a refrain, but you can tell that, you know, 10 years on, is the band have really nailed that, made it better. But another thing I love about The Birthday Party is the use of fridge, as in stop being frigid, not as in a refrigerator, and diss. I just think it's brilliant that he's got this global audience, but he's not afraid to use British slang such as fridge, diss, and Bagsy not in net.
Yeah, Bagsy not in net. But as the birthday party, I think honestly the lyrics are just so good. I think my favourite one is does it go through you when I'm talking to you? You know that I could sue you if we're married and you fuck up again.
Yeah.
So good.
I love it. I love as well where it's got like the girls saying, "Oh, you know, come out," and it's always like, "I've got a missus, so there can't be any kissing." But then in the next line, they're like, "No, no, it's not that kind of party. It's is it Ritalin or something like that?"
Adderall.
Adderall. That's it. I'm thinking
it's
of Ritalin.
It's all Adderall now. It doesn't make you want to do it.
Yeah, yeah. I love that. Love that. Awesome. My favorite tracks though, because I'm torn. Is Nothing Revealed, but also Tonight I Wish I Was Your Boy. They're next to each other as well, so for me that's just like a really good chunk of music that I really enjoy. I've decided that I'm calling Tonight I Wish I Was Your Boy Biker Groove.
Yeah,
I was
going to
say, you're
going to
go into that.
Yeah, well, just because it's got a really nice groove, and he's originally from Newcastle, and also Biker Grove. Other notes I've made on Tonight, I wish I was your boy. I've put nice groove, biker groove. This song may make it cool and credible to be white. Can see everyone just. Everyone just vibing to this, arms around each other and creating a community feel at gigs. Also, I love Fucked It Royally.
Yeah.
yeah. And it's nice the way. Like that, it's all, Healy's all about that for me, those casual lyrics and the way he, conversational, that's special. I've got, you know, a lot's changing, but that's not going away.
Yeah. And then Nothing Revealed, that's the one that I think is could be an Ed Sheeran song. But if Ed Sheeran released it, people will be like, "Oh my god, this is his best work yet."
Go on, Dan. What are your standout ones so far?
I mean, you're not. If we all the tracks, I mean, you're not going to beat Too Shy for me. That could be one of my favourite songs of all time. But
it's so good.
Like, I love Birthday Party too. The one that I'm actually humming, which I never when I first heard it, because it's lyrically not very ambitious. I'd say, guys.
Do you know, I know what you mean. It does get in your head, doesn't it, guys?
Yeah, I keep humming that melody, man. Like, that's I'm sort of not determined not to like it, because I'm like, I think he could have said what he's saying in that song in a more like eloquent, less obvious way, and that would have allowed me to enjoy it more.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Like, the bluntness and simplicity of it is part of what it is. So I do get it, but for me, like, I like it when he uses big words. It turns me on.
guys, I think it's deep. And I was thinking about it while I was waiting for my laptop to actually work. I was thinking, like, some friendships last longer than, like, marriages. And Shaun of the Dead... to go to a completely different media, is a love story between Sean and Ed. It's all about their friendship with some zombies and an actual boy-girl love interest thrown in. I just think it's beautiful. Both Shaun the Dead and guys. I don't think friendship is celebrated enough in media.
I like that it, you know, the thing that precedes immediately precedes guys is Don't Worry, the song that Tim Healy wrote.
Yeah.
Like, I love that the album closes with, like, a song that Matty and his dad are singing. And then, obviously, it all culminates with the ballad of me and my homies, which is guys.
Yes. I like to think, though, while Tim was recording, Mike Crossy was sat there at his mixing desk going, oh, I think we're going to have to auto-tune that, lads.
I don't know about that. It's in the video. Tim singing.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Auto-tune is an artistic choice, isn't it? But
there's a lot of that on this album.
Thick. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Probably too much for my taste in places where I wouldn't have said it was necessary.
Yeah, you know what, I agree with you there, but artistic choice, isn't it? I think my only minor quibble with this album is that I probably won't be able to listen to it enough because it's not as accessible to my girlfriend as previous work. So she'd be like, oh, I don't want to listen to this one. And I'm like, but I do. Yeah, because I can stick the others on in the car and when she's around more, I would say. But this, there's too much she won't like.
Because I think if you take the songs individually, I think the pop leaning, but they're not gonna get Song of the Week on Capital FM, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Although Too Shy gets played, doesn't it?
That's true. Yeah.
And so did the sound.
What do we think of it? Sort of the latter half of the album is probably the more experimental stuff. So you've got Shiny Collarbone, which is like a dancehall EDM thing. Having No Head, which is the big George Daniel production masterpiece.
Yeah. Shiny Collarbones is brilliant.
Yeah.
It's I feel like there they've really demonstrated that they understand the more of the history of dance music because it's got dancehall references, which is one of the earlier versions of garage drum and bass. Mm. Before that you had dancehall, which is like Toddler T, if you're aware of Toddler T. White guy from Sheffield, but very credible in the dancehall scene. Also married to Annie Mac. But yeah, it's got like these top line melodies, which are more trance or techno, I think. You know, because it's not emulating disco, so it's not house music. So therefore, my knowledge of dance music tells me it's trance or techno. and then what was it? Having No Head. That reminds me of the latter part of Empty Cans by The Streets. It's just like a nice... I think it was the piano that I think is the similarity. If you've listened to Grand Don't Come For Free, it's a great album. I'm sure you'll agree. And the last song, Empty Cans, it's 8 minutes something long, and the Empty Cans on its own is a journey. Starts off quite aggressive, and then the protagonist, Mike Skinner, has a bit of an epiphany and realises that his friends are better than he initially thought. I won't ruin the story of the album if you're going to listen to it. He has his epiphany and the piano starts and he's all positive rather than aggressive and negative, and I feel like that's been taken and put into Having No Head.
I really like Playing On My Mind, man. I think some of the lyrics in that are like, whoa. There's a particular bit, right, where he says, I met one of your friends and it was dead nice, he was fine, but he said the things that interest me exist outside of space and time. Now, I know I should have left it, but who says that? What a sigh. It all kicked off and it's been playing on my mind. And I just think, yeah, I bet he's met loads of them people since getting famous. And I don't even know if it could be self-referential as well, like, because he's sort of gone from being a lad, probably more so than he ever wishes he was now.
Yeah.
Like, and to maybe being somebody with those like way bigger ideas, and sometimes he's got to come back and face those people who knew him before all that, and just that idea of that growth and being so like not high and mighty, but just, you know, having a way bigger, like, open mind and trying to have a conversation with somebody who doesn't. What a great concept, man.
Yeah, that's really, really put together well. Sorry, I can't say. That's ironic. I'm trying to say he's put his thoughts together well and I can't get mine out. You get the gist, though. He's put the ideas across well and you really understand it. It hits home. So, yeah, I like that. I like the steel guitar on that as well.
Because that's, I mean, there's so much on it, isn't there? That one's sort of passed me by a little bit at the moment.
But, I mean, it's produced very similarly to Guys, to Jesus Christ. And I just wish that some of these songs were just less acoustic-y and they'd done them in more of like a rock style.
Because
I think they could have been like higher level earlier 1975 bangers, but they've obviously, you know, it's all artistic decisions. They've chosen not to. And it must be just where they are as like artists right now. But I'm like, oh, come on, give me some more like oomph in some of them.
Yeah, I wonder what this album would be like played live. You know, if they did this album start to finish.
Yeah.
I don't think you'd come out of it sweaty, feeling like you've just run a marathon.
Yeah.
Like if they did the 1975. Or very long title live from start to finish. You come out of that like, wow, I feel reborn. I'm just like,
mad. What it means like that music is right. This is some philosophical shit that I'm not really qualified to talk about, right? Because if this album's your first album, it doesn't get released. A label doesn't release this.
No, absolutely not. Right.
So it's crazy. So what is music then? It's actually everything to do with the band and everything that we know about them as a collective that allows this to become releasable for a label and allow it to become popular. And it's such a like interesting way of looking at music that it's way more than the sounds that you put down. I mean, we knew that anyway, but it's a great example of it. I think that it's absolutely the right time in their careers for them to do this. And they couldn't have done it before.
Yeah. I think you need to, before this can be appreciated, you need to prove you know what you're doing. The reason that satire, for example, works is because you have previously proven you understand comedy, you understand the politics that you were about to talk about, and therefore when you were using satire, people aren't saying the guy's just racist, they're saying he's making fun of racism. You know what I mean? You need to get your first jokes out before you can do your satire. Like if you just came out. That's probably not a great example. Maybe poetry would be like, you need to prove that you've got a grasp of language before you can start fucking it up on purpose.
So, like, the self-referential with the lyrics and stuff like that, and even in the past, they've sort of, like, hinted at previous songs. But even in, like, the music on this one. So, what, Shiny Collarbone contains, like, a sample from It's Not Living If It's Not With You?
Yeah, it does.
And there's, like, there's overt... Because, like, in the past, like, they've referenced their own stuff with, like, Face Down and Lost My Head, interpolated, which is the word I love saying, because it makes it sound very credible. But they were so overt with it this way, like, Nothing Revealed, Everything Denied starts with I Never Fucked In My Car, I Was Lying.
Yeah.
Taken right from Love It If We Made It. I just find it interesting in that on this album, they sort of think of it, this is the end of the year album that they're saying, and they've made so many references to like the past work. And it's like another layer for the committed fans, because it's, they say with like sort of with movies and like TV and stuff like that, when you add Easter eggs and you add references and stuff like that, you need to be there for casual fans who they'll just gloss over and the committed fans who'll get it. because you don't want to do anything that's going to alienate anyone.
Yeah.
And I feel like they've done that here perfectly. Like, none of these references, they all still work and work, like, make sense in the songs without knowing the entire history of the band. Yeah. But then if you do, there's just like another layer added to the whole album for you.
Yeah, it's a nice nod, isn't it?
The lyric in playing on my mind as well about I don't get clothes online because I worry about the fit, but that rule doesn't apply concerning my relationships. Oh!
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's what? Brilliant.
Yeah, so good, isn't it?
But I saw that in that video. Do you know that he did? Was it GQ that he did it for?
Undercover Mahalia.
Or something. And he told someone that was going to be a lyric, didn't it? And I was like, yeah.
But that's so like, is that not a sort of subtle reference to a brief inquiry into online relationships? Like,
oh, full circle. Oh, he's back done it.
To the theme of that album, never mind specific lyrics.
This is the story of a lonely, lonely man.
I always wish that that album would have been more, like that title would have been like represented more obviously, do you know what I mean? I was excited to hear songs directly about that, but
it's a bit more subtle,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think Ed Sheeran could release Jesus Christ as well and make a serious amount of money.
Do you reckon? Oh, yeah. I think it's very progressive for his fan base, the lyrics.
Yeah.
When she talks about masturbation, it's not.
Yeah. That, how good is that, though? Like, now I listen to it and it doesn't shock me. But the first time I was like, well, wasn't expecting that. But it's so raw and real. Like, I just love that you can tell that those two people in that song are really fighting their feelings and they're not proud to be gay. Not that it's like anything to be proud or ashamed of, it's just neutral, you're just gay, aren't you? But I love that song because to me, I don't know if they are, if they're putting the sexuality after God. I'm not quite worked that out yet. If they're like saying, I have these feelings, but my feelings for God and the church are stronger, therefore I will suppress them, or they're kind of going, I've got these feelings that religion doesn't agree with, therefore I should fuck off religion.
I imagine that would be that sort of dual interpretation is probably because, you know, both those scenarios apply to people in those situations. Like there are some people that sort of like, no, I need to be true to who I am, and then leave that dynamic of being in those like religious families. And there are people as well that you see online, like people that are in these like sort of really super church families, and they come out and say they've had conversion therapy. And it's like, what the fuck?
Pray away the gay.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, it reminds me, the atmosphere of it, the sadness of it. Do you know what I mean? Even though the lyrics aren't that sad, I don't think. But like, I don't know. Anyway, the atmosphere of the song reminds me of Benny Blanco. But Benny Blanco, Halsey and Khalid Eastside. Have you heard it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know the song. Yeah.
It's a vibe, that song. Especially if you watch the video there, it's like harrowing almost. Yeah. Like if you really sit and listen, you're like, whoa, what? Mm. Don't listen to it on a come down.
There was another one that I made a come down sort of reference to. I was check my notes.
Check the YouTube.
Can't find it. We'll get to it when we review this. When we do the singles one by one, but don't worry.
Yeah. Some are going to be hard.
don't worry. Yeah. Right. Hear me out.
Don't at me.
Yeah. Add some jingle bells and some, you know, atmospheric things.
Chris, I can hear it.
Christmas number one, 2020.
Yes. I'm fine with it. Yes. The campaign starts here.
And you're like, you know, you're gonna stay another day there. I don't know what instrument that is.
Yeah.
Jingle bells isn't the correct one because that's like into like the sleigh bells, like in Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas Is You.
You can have like tuned bells though. I think that's what it is.
Yeah, there we go. So that's, there we go. George, if you're listening,
handheld,
add some bells and you've got yourself a Christmas number one. Yeah, that could be a Christmas present for Tim. Imagine that, Tim Healy, I'll feed a same pet star, Christmas number one. He'd be like, fuck you, Jimmy Nail, I've got a single at number one. Well, Jimmy Nail's just thinking about crocodile shoes. He's saying, don't worry, I'm Christmas number one.
Do you know what? We've not discussed, like, the Greta Thunberg, like, chat in the 1975. I think it's a big decision to drop the 1975 as it's always been for the first time.
Yeah.
No, maybe they were running out of ideas. My UKG version would have been cool, actually.
Yeah.
But it's weird. Like, with that, like, a bit of me goes, don't tell me what to do. I want to come and listen to music that be part of a, like...
Absolutely, I have, like, the same feeling.
Environmental movement. And then, on the other hand, I'm like, you know what? If his audience is young people, you know, teenagers, who almost need to be inspired to change things when they're 30, 40, 50, then, okay, I understand it. Yeah. It's weird. I just want to know how, like, contrived or not it is. Or is
I think it's... part of me thinks, like, if you're preaching to the choir, really, because the sort of people that are going to sit through that on a 1975 album are the sort of people that are going to be very conscious about this sort of stuff.
Yeah,
but then I also think, like, I can't remember which one of them described Greta Thunberg as the most, like, punk person they've ever met, and, like, she doesn't pander to anyone at all, and she doesn't give you a pat on the back for anything, and I think the sort of you know, they're probably inspired by, like, a whole, like, ethos about it. And it probably inspired the decisions on this album, really. People like that. Like, I mean, because obviously she's doing something that she's so, like, committed in, that she's just, like, she's just chinned off school, hasn't she? And she's just...
chinned off school,
travelling
yeah.
around the world, like, climate demonstrations. They're probably thinking, like, that's, like...
good impression, though.
So cool, let's do something with so as much conviction as her, and let's do something we truly believe we music we should be making. Right, so yeah, let's do it. Final thoughts on the whole album then.
So I'm, like, excited to get to know it as a whole piece here. I think it's going to be a big grower for me, and yeah, it's a new direction for a band that I love, and it's, you know, it's we've got to give it a chance and get into it, do you know what I mean? And so it's not, like, blowing my head off right now, but I think it will do soon, and I'm looking forward to it.
I think, yeah, I agree, like you say, it's gonna, you need some time with it, and it's gonna grow on you. Already it's been, what, 3 days, and these songs, they have grown on me already. I think it's such a strong album. I think I'm looking through it. I think it's better than the last one.
Yeah, I think the last album, what's
the
it called?
The Brief Inquiry.
That's it, yeah. I think that's the weakest
one. Yeah, I do. And there's some amazing songs on it. Like, I like America and America Likes Me. Yeah. Sincerity is Scary. They're amazing songs, but I think there's... I don't know. There's just some that I don't think will really stand the test of time, perhaps, on that album. But I think there's tracks on here that I think people are going to be talking about a lot. I'm amazed that this album got a one-star review.
Yeah.
Like, okay, it might not be for everyone, I understand the criticisms, but there's so much good on it that I just think that's, you know, that's making a statement that you don't like the band. For me, that's not a...
It is 100%, because it's, even if you don't like the music, like you said, you cannot deny the artistry and how well it has been put together. Yeah, I would say it's a grower, but it's already grown on me.
Yeah.
Currently, it's my favourite album. Give it 6 months, I might be back on the 1975 because I remember all the memories. But I just think it's brilliant. Artistically, they developed so much. It's, you know, their ability as songwriters, as producers, they've just come on leaps and bounds. I'm very proud of them.
Yeah.
But it is a grower. It's not for the casual music listener, except for Too Shy or... birthday party, maybe there's the odd one, isn't there? But Yeah, I view albums as one piece of art. Tranquility Base Hotel and Casino, another one, which I think needs to be listened to as one piece of consecutive music for you to appreciate it. Going off piece, Dana. Yeah, I like it. In conclusion.
I mean, I think it's just quickly likened it to Tranquility Base and Hotel, but for me, that's a concept album, and I think that's quite narrow in its sort of the goal of what it's trying to produce, where this is the opposite, this is the most expansive thing. And I feel like if there's a couple of songs on Tranquility Base and Hotel you don't like, you're not going to like the whole album. If there's a couple of songs on and Notes on a Conditional Form you don't like, you know, skip the tracks on a couple. There probably will be two songs you like or something. So.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. It's very... Yeah, Tranquility Base, Hotel and Casino, Mark speaking, please may I ask how to direct your call. it's narrow, isn't it? That is the sound.
Yeah.
Whereas this is... Yeah, I see what you mean. Not a good comparison, then.
So, Tranquility Base, 4 stars out of 5, would you give it?
Yeah, 4.5.
Right, thank you everyone for listening to this bonus episode about Notes on a Conditional Form. This coming week we've got Heart Out, which features Max Griff from Zella. You can find us on Twitter at the1975pod, or you can get in touch with the show at pauseitplayitpod@gmail.com. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Josh William without the vowels. Matt?
I've only got 8% battery, so I think we should skip mine.
Okay, you can find Matt at Junior, which is JEWKNEEOR. There we go. Dad abstains from social media, so you can only find his thoughts about the world here. Every Wednesday we release episodes. So thank you again for listening, and we'll see you soon.
Love you, bye.
Bye.